Mini episode 1922 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1922. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Ben Hsu. And much of the time when Ben is on, he is on in his role as NBA chief hoops analyst. But occasionally, probably the second biggest chunk of time would be when Ben is on here as part of our ongoing mini-series covering developments in the streaming industry, which is what we're doing today, as this is an ongoing fascination of Ben's and mine, and seeing how things are kind of playing out and what different developments are. The biggest thing that we're going to be talking about here today, and we'll talk about some other notes along the way, but sort of the headliner is now that we're at the point where Paramount's acquisition of Warner Media, it was approved by Warner Media. It is still going through the regulatory channels, so it's not 1,000,000% official yet, but when you have the company that they are trying to acquire that initially rejected them, and they had to go the route of hostile takeover before it became a regular takeover, it is noteworthy that eventually they prevailed upon the Warner Media folks to go with them instead of Netflix, which they had been so insistent on for such a period of time. And it is one of these things, Ben, where, again, you're obligated to act in the best fiduciary interest of your shareholders and to take care of them in the best possible way. And I was always dubious that the whole split theory was really going to generate as much as what Paramount was going to be willing to do, because Netflix, again, was only going to be buying essentially, you know, studio and streaming and that kind of stuff. And the cable channels were going to get put out on a nice flow, much like what NBC did with what are now the Versant channels. And I was always dubious that they were going to make as much money with two different plays there. Netflix was going to throw a lot of money for the assets that they were acquiring. But this was a thing where, again, the company, you know, openly wasn't putting much value on the cable channels and some of the other assets that were going to be going with it. So this is always what I thought was going to be the most lucrative route for Warner to go. Paramount comes in, scoops them up, and we are now in a world of contemplating what comes next. We're starting to hear TNT Sports and CBS Sports would be merging. No great surprise there. You're going to have the Ellisons taking over CNN, which Christiane Amanpour was on record the other day as being quite shook about that, as you might imagine that she would be. So all of the different ramifications of what lies ahead are starting to come into clearer view at this time, Ben.
Right, and one thing I did want to add to Rick, that it's projected to, the deal is projected to close roughly in the third quarter. And I know there's an article today that Warner Brothers Discovery noted a, you know, noted a net loss of $2.9 billion, but most of that, as you can probably guess, is will be absorbed essentially by Paramount at the end of the day. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they deal with these cable channels, because again, most of the products from the Warner Media, it's, you know, there's a handful of places like Discovery and TNT and TBS that are pretty notable to a lot of people, but there's also a handful of other stations as part of that group that aren't exactly as it. I would not be surprised to see potentially some of these stations get cut down over time, or if there is maybe some restructuring just involved on that end too. And I think at the end of the day, if I'm Warner Bros. Discovery, I was able to create an attractive scenario and at least keep most of Hollywood happy at the same period of time. Mm-hmm. Because I know there was a lot of discussion that that the Netflix deal was very, you know, sort of customer friendly, but not exactly Hollywood friendly, because there's a lot of discussions due to Netflix's limited releases of their own existing original content. So it's going to be a very interesting way they have to. And I know now mainly it's always just financial at the time. And we're also looking at the potential of, like, you know, the streaming revenue has been super high. It's been up 9% for both Paramount Plus and HBO Max. So it feels like, to me at least, this is an opportunity for Paramount Plus to grow. And whether they decide to keep them both separate, whether they decide to merge them together, very similar to what Disney Plus did with Hulu, it's going to be a very interesting sort of little hub that Paramount now has, because I think a lot of us were, when we would do our, you know, our streamer ranks, mm-hmm. Paramount was usually never in the top three.
Right. But you start to put, again, if you're going to take what's on in HBO Max, which you and I have always been high on as far as the depth of the catalog and the quality and everything that's there, and you put it with Paramount Plus, then you have a true powerhouse. You really, really do.
Yeah. And also, it would behoove me not to mention, I also forgot to mention CNN, too. Obviously, Ted Turner passed away earlier today. So,
ironically, as we tape this, yeah. I mean, so we're talking about what's going to happen to CNN, taping this on the very day that the founder passed away. And so there's going to be quite a amount of reflection on that in the months to come, because CNN, if this merger does finally go through, and we're talking on the premise today that it is, because again, to me, the biggest hurdle was not having to do it in a hostile takeover kind of a way. They cleared that hurdle. Warner is a willing subservient partner in this takeover. The regulatory approvals are still pending, but nothing at this point that appears to be that big of a
much at this point, because the only argument would be monopoly, and I don't think monopoly exists really in this one.
Yeah, like the California Attorney General's office is talking tough, but I don't really read anything into that. And
I don't really see what's going to be dramatic. Like, I know Netflix was a bigger name type discussion, right, but it was more, I think, that was more of a Hollywood backlash and a political backlash.
Well, and this is where, again, the winners and losers of the two different scenarios come into stark contrast, because this way you're looking, the fear is that you're going to have a lot of studio consolidation and that you're going to have less movie projects going forward, certainly less jobs in the industry. If there's the full-on merger between all of the Paramount and the Warner operations. And I think the Ellisons have been out there, I think, like, trying to make promises in various places that, like, well, you know, these entities are still going to exist on their own. But, like, those promises are always made at the outset, and there's always the consolidation that ends up happening, the job redundancies, et cetera. But the people that are the happiest about this, because again, the ones that were the most scared of the Netflix takeover were the movie theater chains, because you're looking at the, you know, again, Netflix goes against their entire business model. Now, as much as I think you and I had joked about this in recent years here, that, like, Netflix, I think, had done some premieres or special screenings of films at certain places, and I was like, sounds like a movie theater model that they're using. But that was something where they were just a guest. Okay. It was like being at an Airbnb as opposed to owning a place. They weren't owning studios. They weren't going to be interested in the business of owning and operating studios, or movie theaters, I should say, theater chains, etc. Theater chains were not going to be anything that Netflix was going to be getting involved in. So they're the ones that are happy about this. There's a lot of Hollywood bigwigs that have been signing petitions against this. I think in a large part, this comes down to, again, the politics of the Ellisons, which are skewed a certain way, which goes against a good chunk of Hollywood. And I think the sense that, again, if CNN moves in the direction that CBS News has, that you've already got, you know, Fox News in the industry here, you're going to have all that. Again, MSNBC still exists. Other outlets still exist. But I think a lot of the opposition that the Ellisons are taking from Hollywood, it strikes me as coming on more of a cultural level than anything else.
Right. And so it's going to be something very interesting to see in terms of what they decide to do with the cable channels, because I'd assume in the short term they would do an evaluation in terms of everything. Like, obviously, well, let's be honest, I'm almost 100% sure they're not going to be cutting any of these major networks like CNN, TNT, but there is going to be restructuring. There are going to be discussions in terms of how can we maybe merge some of these units together. And also, one thing that I think sometimes gets forgotten in this sort of merger narrative is there's going to be a lot of discussion about cash flow, and especially how, you know, during the last couple of years, like, we saw how David Zaslav at HBO essentially was paring down everything to be made possible for an acquisition target. So it's going to be interesting to see how much money Paramount is really going to put into HBO and all these other things, because there is going to be a little bit of a redundancy with some of their existing programming.
Yes, it's going to be a great question on that. And again, on this day, as we're recording this, where Ted Turner passed away, I mean, there are so many different ramifications as far as, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, because in terms of some of the other streaming developments, I want to talk about this being the first year that streaming really weighs in heavily on the NBA playoffs. Of course, the introduction of playoffs to cable came with Turner Broadcasting. I believe it was in the late 80s as part of their TV package. And so Ted Turner was instrumental in the history of, obviously, sports on cable. We all think of the Atlanta Braves back in the day, et cetera. And also, hugely, that gigantic subculture in America, of which I count myself a part of, the pro wrestling subculture, everything with World Championship Wrestling back in the day and its predecessor, Jim Crockett Promotions, on TBS back in the 80s. And when you look at this, again, there's been, in recent years, ever since the founding of AEW, returning, ironically, to the Turner networks, from which they were expunged in 2001 by Vince McMahon's attempted monopoly, AEW getting on the Turner network starting in 2019, a lot of the tribalism in the fandom that there's been the last couple of years, and a lot of the grifters out there that try to appeal to some of the disaffected folks that don't like one promotion or the other. I would argue most of the grifters have aimed their cannons AEW's way. And you see it in recent days here with the whole smear campaign of, like, they're going to be canceled. They've already been, David Zaslav told Tony Khan last summer they were going to be canceled, which, again, the Paramount deal, nobody knew the Paramount deal was going to happen last summer. So that automatically is false. But the whole notion of, again, at the by the end of 2027, AEW is going to be left to try to craft a new deal here with Paramount, which already has UFC, which is, of course, under the banner of TKO. So it's not like it's one of the WWE products that they're in bed with here, but it's an associated, it's sort of a first cousin of WWE, if you will. So you always get into these entanglements whenever there's something like this that happens, and whenever there's this kind of consolidation in the industry, as there is with all these channels and all these brands, you know, from the two different entities now ending up under one banner, Ben. There's going to be what's happening in the wrestling biz right now, and the speculation about where things go from here is replicating itself over industries all over the business.
Right, and I think especially in the scenario too, we all knew that Paramount Plus didn't have exactly the widest offering of sports at the period of time.
Right.
And, you know, obviously you have college football, obviously you have the NFL, and you obviously now have UFC. But in the acquisition with Warner Brothers, you're going to get Major League Baseball, the NHL. You're also going to get, you know, like probably some of these playoff game, college football playoff games, if the playoff expansion does occur. So it feels like a very solid augmentation for Paramount, because, again, like we said too, it's like if you weren't a fan of Champions League football or the NFL, you probably were not buying Paramount Plus for sports. But now they have a little bit of a wider net. Honestly, outside of the NBA, they pretty much have all the major sports at this period of time.
Yeah, they really do. And it's one of these things where, again, one of the biggest things I'm looking at in the future here, and it's going to involve a certain amount of renegotiation, and I think what that means is shoveling more money towards some of the sports leagues to renegotiate a bit here. But in terms of the fact that the Stanley Cup final is on TNT every other year because of the rotating deal with ESPN. Could that be going to CBS? Could any of the baseball coverage, including postseason, could that be going to CBS? You mentioned before about the college football playoff, even as it is now. And again, the Turner Sports is beginning the two weakest games of the opening weekend here. You can always look at the thing here and tell what the two games are. The 5-12,
it's still an asset, I would say.
It is an asset, it's but an you know asset. It's gonna be with the 5-12 game, and it's gonna be the other one that doesn't involve as much of a marquee program. And crucially, those games are always up against the NFL on that weekend. Nevertheless, like you said, it's an asset. It is, and that's a thing where, again, if you're Paramount and you're looking at the big picture of this, you'd probably rather have those games on CBS also too. Yeah. So what would that take? Now, again, they're being subleased from ESPN, which is what makes it interesting, because would ESPN be sitting here and saying it's in our best interest to let it go to CBS? I mean, theoretically, to get a wider audience, I guess, but this is now a competitor of yours that you sublease to, which has only gotten bigger and more powerful. So that's where, again, a lot of the politics that gets involved in this and where these things are going to end up. And I would argue even the French Open, which is coming up in a few weeks here, that's something where, again, Turner Sports, when they were on this spending spree, once the NBA went away, I mean, spending spree in relative terms. They don't want to shell out for the NBA, but they lost the NBA. I was like, oh, crap, we got to start getting some other stuff. So they got the French Open. They get some college football, the college basketball. The college basketball, I think, really kind of paid off because they got Big 12 stuff. And, you know, Big 12 has had a wealth of depth and quality the last 2 years or so. So it's like I could even see a lot of the French Open stuff going there because realistically, you know, Warner overpaid for that. It was one of those things where it's just like, we got to make an impact. We got to get something here that is exclusive to us. And again, if you're Paramount picking them up, like, hey, it makes sense to put a bunch of this stuff on CBS. It makes sense to put it on the bigger platform. So it's interesting that, again, for the upcoming merger, which is supposed to close in the third quarter, which would be, I think, congruent with the timeline you talked about before for the overall merger, the merger in this case of CBS Sports and TNT Sports, that's a thing where, again, the network kind of, the big network, the mothership sort of absorbing a lot of these excellent cable properties, or not in full, right? Like, you're never going to see the entire TBS baseball schedule end up on CBS. No. They're not preempting their Tuesday night lineup for that.
And again, but one scenario we have seen also too, Rick, with ESPN, there could be simulcast capabilities. There's
yes. Other multicast too. Yeah.
Multicast. Yeah. So it's going to be very interesting in terms of what Paramount decides to do with these remaining sports in terms of, like, will they potentially re-up all these deals at some period? Because I know baseball and I know the NHL will come up at some time in the near future. And we also know that they also have to negotiate with the NFL as well. So there, it's going to be interesting to see which properties they really want to choose to focus on. Or, you know, again, one of the big reasons why this deal was done and why the Elsons wanted this was mainly for the film studios. Yes. But I think the more interesting properties here is that they're now absorbing a bunch of sports entities either onto their platform or now they have acquisitional rights to them. So there's an opportunity whether they want to change deals, move deals around, kind of, you know, make a decision in terms of what the best options are for them going forward. Because, again, they're going to have a lot of these deals will come up and negotiations are going to have to be made.
Yep. And I'm going to make a prediction right now. I'm going out on a big limb here. I haven't heard this anywhere. This is completely original from me. Again, yay me if it happens. If it doesn't happen, hey, I'm going way out on a limb. At least I tried. But my guess is this. You've got all these cable channels now, which some of which may be duplicative of others as you start to look at it here. I mean, I do know that, again, you know, True TV in recent years, they've started to use a little bit of the primetime lineup as far as spillover, as far as simulcasts, replays that I think they've used it for some AEW replays, but some multicast type stuff of other sports. Here's my prediction. It may not be true TV, but they're going to take a channel and they're going to flip it. And I think that they're going to move what's on CBS Sports Network to there. I think they're going to try and beef up. Like, they're not going to have anything that's going to be on the par with ESPN, but I think wanting to have their sports cable network in more homes, I think they're going to pick a network that's in a lot more homes. And I think they're probably gonna as particularly, again, if they feel like the offerings on that thing can be dispersed easily to other channels. And True TV, like, you mean to tell me you couldn't take a bunch of the stuff that's on there and just slap it on the TLC or one of these other things? You're going to have a whole bunch of networks here. There's going to be some rebranding, and that's my prediction, is that they're going to move CBS Sports Network to a network that's in a lot more homes right now. Because, again, they're going to want to be taken seriously. If you have CBS Sports TNT Sports coming together, I think you're going to need a cable channel that's in a lot more homes to be able to back up, you know, this thing here. So that's my prediction, Ben. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think it's likely to happen. And again, but they're going to review all the properties involved, and it would not shock me to see a True TV get rebranded or moved around or just essentially decimated by the deal, hypothetically. But we're gonna have to wait and see, because, again, we're currently in this still sort of weird timeline with cable and with streaming, mm-hmm. where cable is still a more preferred thing for people's homes, but we're also running the timeline too now where the economy's been pretty up and down all year. So we're gonna really see the streaming industry continue to grow in the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, you just raised an excellent point there for a segue to what I was talking about before with the NBA playoffs and all the games that are on Prime this postseason. And again, there have been a lot of regular season games on Prime as well. But this is where it really kind of hits home. The combination of that and the NBA doing away with the local telecasts in the first round. The fact that those are going away. Everything is national from here on in. And that you're seeing games that are on streaming that, again, at a point in time where we're hearing that the ratings are up this year. And again, some of that has to do with, again, Nielsen kind of tweaked it with the big data stuff in the last year as far as how they measure what's in certain homes. Live sports have tended to do somewhat better with the new measurement system overall. So there might be some of that built into it. But you're looking at something where, again, the lagging indicator on this are the games that are on Prime, unsurprisingly. Because, again, you're having to kind of retrain people into something like this. And I said to you off air that this feels like, I don't want to say like a major inflection point, because we've seen some other things. We've seen NFL playoff games streaming only, I think, for at least the last three seasons. We've seen, you know, special NFL events like the Christmas ones, et cetera, that have been exclusive to cable, but we're exclusive to streaming. But we're on this run now where, again, creating Netflix as the opening day thing for MLB, it was never treated as that big of a deal, with the possible exception of Sunday Night Baseball. I know years ago they would do the first game there, but it was like, it was never hyped as much as this year's was on Netflix. Like, they're trying to eventify one opening day game. The same way that the Home Run Derby is going to be moving there midsummer. Prior to that, as I said to you off air, my two favorite races of the year are within hours of one another, Monaco and the Indy 500. Monaco is going to Apple TV because the rest of Formula One is exclusive to Apple TV. And again, everything right now with the NBA playoffs. And it's a thing where, as we said before, with Ted Turner, you go back to, I think, the late 80s, the start of some of the games being exclusive to cable. At that time, I think it was just TBS, because I think that might have been before TNT came along, or maybe in the very early days of TNT when some of the games were there. And it was a thing where when the games were on cable at that time, it was different culturally in the sense of there wasn't the sense of like, we're losing anything. Because prior to that, I was like, CBS would do the playoff games that happen to fall on Sunday afternoons, And I think they would do the conference finals, and certainly they would do the finals. I'm not sure CBS did the conference finals all the way back to when they took over the package from ABC in the 70s. I'd have to look that up and see. But cable was giving you something you didn't have before.
Right.
And that's where nobody really kind of farted at it. And the same thing with all of the hockey postseason games being on cable. It was just like, oh, well, you're not taking anything away from us. You're giving us something that we weren't getting before, albeit we have to have cable to see that now. And there is some grumbling now. And again, you've got some politicians in Congress who are like, we need to stop having all the sports on different streaming services. But there's a lot of the whining on social media as we see, like, you need to have 10 different streaming services to be able to watch this, and this. You're hearing a lot of that this spring as these games are going there, because the thing with streaming is, even on something as widely available as Amazon Prime, which, as we've talked about before, I'm not even sure you can compare it to the rest of the streaming services, because so many people just use it for the free shipping. So many people right. aren't subscribed to it for the offerings. I'm sure you have a lot more people that are subscribed to it for the free shipping that they get as opposed to the TV stuff. But nevertheless, this sense that people are having, and no matter how much grumbling there is online about it, it doesn't stop. Like we're moving in this direction of where things are only going to keep going more and more and more in this direction. And none of the grumbling is going to stop this, but it is a growing sense, and a sense this spring, Ben, of where people are feeling like a lot of the ones that are grumbling anyways, like something is being taken away from them by the fact that these games are paywalled to Amazon Prime. So the sentiments are what they are out there among a lot of the grumblers and among a lot of the politicians. But again, it's not stopping everything from moving inexorably in that direction.
Right. And I find those arguments kind of silly to me, because if we're being totally honest, when it was just Turner and ESPN, there's literally no way on streaming to watch those channels outside of YouTube TV and these cable packages.
Yeah.
So we're... Ultimately, what it is now is just a major split, splittage. And again, obviously, just on the raw data numbers, like, they came out in a report that said, like, they're averaging 4 million across every playoff game. It's up 22%, probably some of the highest numbers since 93. It's not surprising. A lot of people have NBC. mm-hmm. So there's a high propensity of people who already had the platform. And again, I know we're in a world where everything is costing more and inflation is going up. And one of the bigger questions that I think a lot of people are asking themselves, like, am I spending too much money on sports? Which is a viable question.
Right.
But ultimately, this is very similar to the whole cable argument in the 70s and 80s, where you were having to pay more just to get these exclusive games, whether they were on ESPN or TNT or TBS. So, because there are some cable providers that had that issue. Like, that was also the reason why, like, Motel 6 always said, we have ESPN. So yeah, it's always a very unique adjustment in the industry. And it feels like, too, the bigger trend that a lot of people are seeing now is more along the lines of bars and restaurants having to either shell out money for Peacock or some sort of subsidiary, or illegally streaming it via someone else's device, or it's just one of those things that I think we all have to get used to. Obviously, we also know MLB TV moved to ESPN as well. So that's going to be another thing that people will have to consider. And again, there was that discussion, I believe it was in Congress. I can't remember who the exact person discussing it was the discussion regarding blackout restrictions, the discussion about making sure games that are local to areas are being able to be at least visible on most people's things. But again, too, the problem is we also exist in a world where Amazon is so synonymous at the end of the day with the America culture at this point, to be honest. Everyone buys something from Amazon, even if they don't like the company.
Right.
So it feels like this is just another move to a different area. And the thing I always find more fascinating are people complaining now.
Yeah.
Very boisterous about it. Well, you should have seen our cable bills in the 2000s and 2010s, guys.
Yeah.
They were much, much more than what you're paying right now for streaming.
That is definitely true. And I would say in terms of looking at this, we didn't even mention yet, but it pales in comparison to the number of games that are on Amazon Prime in the playoffs, but there's still a handful of Peacock exclusive games as well. So there's Correct. Games that are behind NBC's streaming paywall there. And to the notion of, and this is getting floated, like you said, by some politicians, and the whole thing is getting dangled about, oh, well, you sure like that antitrust exemption, don't you? It would be a shame if anything happened to that. That's always a prime area for posturing, is when you start threatening about the antitrust exemptions that these sports have, which I don't think they should have in the first place, but that's right. another story for another day. But as far as like what the NFL does, and I think that's what they're talking about there, of like, if it's a Thursday night game, you know, like if the Browns are playing, then I always know that, like, okay, local Channel 5 or whatever is going to have the rights to it. They always make sure that there's an over-the-air component to it in the markets of the two teams, regardless of what platform the game's being shown on nationally. But that's the NFL, where you have a tiny number in terms of the catalog of number of games. What is it now, like 264 or something like that for the entire season? I think I got the number wrong, but I'm in the ballpark. As
it
opposed
right to me,
Rick. I'm in the ballpark at least.
Within range, I would argue.
Right. As opposed to, you don't have that national kind of fascination for what that Thursday night football game is necessarily for any of these playoff series. Maybe with, you know, and as time goes along, maybe with Wemby and San Antonio, as that becomes a real thing there. Oklahoma City, I'm not sure how much, you know, beer they spilled on at the VFW Hall, even though they're a great team. Certainly if Boston was making a deep run, right? There's exceptions to it. If the Lakers were to make a deep run, then you would have something.
We could also talk like the Knicks as well.
The Knicks, potentially.
Sure.
Exactly. But my point is, if you did a thing where the local fans got to watch it on over-the-air TV or some other equivalent, but then everybody else nationally on that, then you'd have Amazon, you'd have everybody saying, well, we're not making our nut on this, because it's a thing of like, disproportionately, the markets of the teams are important for something like this. I would argue far more so than for the NFL, far more so than for NFL, even regular season games. These playoff games, they're dependent on that, even the fans in the market. You're a Cavs fan, you better damn well have Prime or Peacock or whatever if you want to see these games. That's where they're making their money from. So to think that there's going to be some kind of NFL-type equivalent to this of like where, oh, well, you can just, you know, show them free or even on local cable and in the local networks, never going to happen, because that's where they're making their money on this from, is the exclusivity of it, that they're making you subscribe for a certain period of time. And we have seen also too, and again, as important as Peacock is, not only to NBC Sports, but the overall NBC enterprise. You and I have been talking about this for years, and the fact that at the upfronts every spring, they're always hammering on the importance of Peacock and everything like that, which I think is smart in a business sense. I know that the last couple of years, streaming has not been a winner financially, but I've always felt that it's a great long-term play for all of these institutions here. The shareholders don't necessarily love it because they're in it for the short term, a lot of the pump and dump stuff. You're not going to love streaming, but I think the responsible long-term play is to be into streaming, and Peacock is very important. And thus, the network must be a little bit chagrined to see. You've probably seen that I did, that like the rate of churn that they've had in their subscriptions has been, I'm sure, a lot more than what they were hoping it was going to be. I think it was like 9% was the number that I was seeing. And like they've gone to like eventify Sunday night TV throughout the year. Start with Sunday Night Football, which has been the number one show on TV for well over a decade. You now add Sunday Night Basketball, Sunday Night Baseball. They're pretty much going year-round. They have other events during the year as well. Peacock factors very heavily into the Olympics. I've been saying that, like, that whole vision back in 92, like the Olympic triple cast of like where they did the whole thing, but they put it on pay-per-view. The modern equivalent of that basically is Peacock, because you can see anything you want to see from the whole Olympics on Peacock. It's very important to them. And that's where the churn numbers have to be very, very discouraging. And they got to be wondering at this point what more they can do, because NBC has spent very, very, very strongly on all of these packages. And even when they've had them primarily for the over-the-air component. They always put a bunch of them that are Peacock exclusive. I know, like with the Big Ten games, I hear about it here in Ohio State country every time there's an Ohio State game that's Peacock exclusive. So, you know, they got to be wondering what more they can do, Ben.
Yeah, and I think their gamble on sports is ultimately going to pay off because I think it's one of the few things that people who are sports fans will continue to stream and pay money for Peacock. And same thing with Prime and all these other things. Other things. Netflix, we include them as well in this conversation.
Yes.
Disney Plus as well. And one thing we do have to know is that this period of time, especially, I think sports is still the hook to get new subscribers, because you're obviously not going to get more new subscribers with, let's say, a hit show per se. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe you will, but there's no guarantee in today's sort of streaming world that you can create a hit TV show out of nowhere on a cable channel. It's just not the same as it used to be.
I think that is true. And it's very interesting to me that this trend that we've been seeing, and you and I have been calling for this on this show for years in terms of consolidation, because I know, like, from the very beginning of when Disney Plus started in 2020, we were sitting here like, you already got Hulu. Like, what's up with that? Like, and you now see Hulu is going to be slowly subsumed into Disney Plus. Again, we talked about it before, Paramount Plus and HBO Max. HBO Max is going to become redundant. They're not admitting that yet, but you and I know it's true. So to see some of these independent entities out there, I think wisely deciding, no sense trying to start a streaming thing on our own if we're not one of the big boys. Let's partner up with a big boy. And I refer specifically to CW Sports, this announcement that came out recently that they're going to be doing a lot to put a lot of their streaming stuff on ESPN. And I think a lot of it's going to be behind the paywall, frankly, of this new ESPN app. The one that's got the WWE products and some of the other things that are going to be exclusive to it. So putting it on there specifically, partnering up with ESPN, the CW on a corporate level, if anything, is probably closer to the Paramount folks, at least if you look at the history of the network anyways. But basically picking one of these ones, whether it be Paramount, whether it be Disney, ESPN, whatever the case may be, much wiser, I think, than starting their own app and trying to go head-to-head with any of these other things because they're not big enough. But it does also beg the question of, because you're partnering up with a streamer that is outside your corporate family, is it a matter of potentially losing any eyeballs to that? And again, as much as with the CW being a, we don't often think of it as a network. We only think of the big networks as far as being networks, but it is over-the-air TV. One wonders what some of the affiliates might be thinking about that. Like, oh, okay, you don't have to turn into Cleveland Channel 55 to watch this if you have the ESPN plan. So very interesting decision on their part to do that, but it's indicative of where the business is going.
Right, and I think in a way, too, it's a way of possibly creating some additional revenue share for CW Sports to retain some of these rights that they currently have in college basketball, college football, NXT. You also have PBA.
NXT. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You got a lot of these other sort of things that you're integrating into the ESPN Unlimited ecosystem, and the ability now for people to, and we're going to start to see a lot of strange bedfellows at, I don't think this is the only time we're going to see this, Rick, whether it's going to be Turner in the future or whether it's going to be NBC possibly working with Apple TV or with any of these sort of unique partnerships that each of these entities have right now. We're going to see simulcasts. It's going to happen at some period of time, just because there's definitely going to be, the traditional cable model is sort of going out the window now. And I think, again, it's taken a long time, but I think we're getting to the point where it feels, at least to me, that streaming is going to be overtaking cable at some point in the near future.
Yeah, I think very possibly it will be. And that's where, again, you know, as we've said a couple different times through the course of this show, you know, particularly transformative times in the streaming business right now as these things are unfolding. And of course, again, the biggest story of the year with all of this is, of course, Paramount and Warner coming together, Paramount absorbing Warner, but all the different aspects as well when it comes to TV sports, when it comes to some of these deals being done. And ultimately, as the NFL, the biggest kahuna of them all, is doing an early renegotiation of their deals. The opt-out wasn't until 2029, but the NFL is going to them sort of gun in hand, like, wouldn't you like to, lock this in now at this point in time, and to where they're going to be doing a good amount of what? Carving out more packages for streaming services. We've been hearing that there could be five games a year, in this package or that package. They're going to add a Thanksgiving Eve game, probably a second Black Friday game. Anywhere that they can shove more games, they're going to do that. It's shrinkflation for the networks on Sundays, and the networks will continue to pay more and more money for the right to continue to maintain this shrinkflation. The thing that they've got, it's cold comfort to them, I'm sure, but like, well, what more can they possibly do? Like, maybe in the next deal, they'll put in a Tuesday night and a Wednesday night football game, but they can't possibly take too much more away from us. So, but that's where, and look, if it wasn't for the whole thing with having bye weeks and all the scheduling and everything like that, because if you put in a second bye week, we'd probably already have, Tuesday night football or Wednesday night football already. Those are probably more distant things here yet to come. But as far as how this plays out, and again, as the NFL continues to do this, again, I don't think it's no surprise that the NFL was the one that was taking the lead on this. And with the Amazon Prime Thursday night package a couple of years ago, it's always the biggest entity in the business that kind of establishes the pattern here and allows the other sports to kind of swim in their wake, which is what's been happening. And that's where, again, when you're talking about streaming, eventually potentially getting past where cable is, you're really going to see that and I've seen some speculation about maybe the NFL carving out a third Sunday package for the streamers of where they would go head to head with the networks. I don't see the networks going for that. If there's a line in the sand that the networks are willing to draw, it's probably that. Like, sorry, we're not competing with YouTube or somebody else, or Amazon Prime or whatever for one of these things. And I've also seen speculation about Amazon Prime potentially ponying up the massive amounts, and God knows Bezos has it, but to get Sunday night football, NBC's not letting go of Sunday night football, no matter what the cost is. The cost will be no, obstacle to them keeping it. But what the NFL continues to do in this way is going to set the precedent that kind of dribbles down to the other sports here, as far as how much more aggressive they get to sell, continuing to sell to streamers and continuing to move more prime sporting events to streaming.
Right, and I think one thing, too, is that, and we're almost at the point, and I also have to remember, too, Rick, that essentially if we're going on raw data numbers right now, streaming actually has surpassed cable, very smallly, but
okay,
it's, again, I mean, it's really not surprising because cable packages always tend to be more expensive, and we're also, especially with all these sports, we saw how much the NBA was able to get from all these entities for $11 billion, and just all these things that I know the league, that a lot of these leagues are going to be negotiating. And we're also in the timeline, too, where we're seeing these TV rights deals for these sports go to insane evaluations.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, if you have it on your platform, eyeballs are going to be on your platform.
Yep. And that's what it comes down to. And then, full circle here, that's a good part of the reason I think, and I know that you think from what we've said about this with David Zaslav, that Warner became so vulnerable in the first place that they were going to need to be subsumed when they just let the poor negotiating of letting the NBA get away. And Zaslav saying out loud, we don't really need the NBA. I'm paraphrasing here, but that's basically what he said. And then kind of having to double back, make a quasi half-hearted attempt to try to keep it. Like, again, This is the differentiator. Live sports is the biggest one of all because it is, relatively DVR proof. You have to sit through the advertiser ads for the most part, which is something that cannot be said about regularly scheduled programming. So the way that this continues to go, again, sports is going to continue to be the biggest driver of everything happening with streaming. And we're continuing to see this play out. And sports is going to be a huge, huge, huge plurality, Ben, I think, of the overall Warner and Paramount story. Seeing how that plays out, the sporting events that end up migrating to CBS as a part of this, what the synergy ends up being in the whole CBS TNT family, these are the things that I'm keeping an eye on probably most of all out of the whole merger.
Right, and I think it's going to be incredibly interesting, Rick, to see the growth of streaming. I mean, I just saw this statistic from Nielsen, like in 2025, almost 70 million households dropped cable for streaming services. So we're seeing a shift, and we're going to also see a lot of, sadly, cost cutting and layoffs and jobs being missed. But it's going to be a really interesting scenario to see how Netflix and Paramount and Amazon Prime and Peacock are going to be doing battle with each other in the next couple of years over sports rights and specifically, honestly, TV content, because a lot of these entities are essentially spending less money on scripted programming.
That's true. Yeah, and you're going to continue to see more of it migrating to those platforms. Any other thoughts about streaming developments that you have that we didn't get to yet, Ben?
No, nothing big overall. I just think this is going to be an incredibly interesting time. And one of the things that we're also going to have to know, too, is if there is a merger of both Paramount Plus and HBO Max, well, that price is going to obviously go up for those platforms. So it's going to be very interesting to see where that price point is going to end up at.
It's going to be. And I did see that there has been preemptively a lawsuit by a lot of Paramount Plus subscribers who already feel like they're not getting value for this and who are, I think, fearful of what the price point is going to be for a combined product, which as far as a lawsuit here, that part of it, I don't get. Like, why don't you just not subscribe if you don't think there's I haven't subscribed to Paramount Plus that often. I have on a handful of occasions here. If there's a new season of Mayor of Kingstown coming or something like that, then I will for a short term. But that's the very reason I've never been a long-term subscriber to Paramount Plus like I have so many other streaming services. I just don't feel like it's been worth it to this point. I have been a long-term subscriber to HBO Max, so I will likely be a subscriber to the combined one, but we'll have to see. One of the other funny things...
And another discussion too, Rick, is it's very possible Paramount just leaves HBO on its own.
It is possible. Bundle deal. And that's possible too, but I think ultimately subsuming it is probably the way they go. It's funny that like when you look at the Paramount acquisition some of the different, Paramount Plus, I guess I would say, acquisition of what was on Showtime, because they used to have their own streaming service, and I used to subscribe to that for a period of time. But like that being subsumed into Paramount Plus has made it a little bit more forgettable, I think, and to where it's almost a footnote to the whole thing that, like, guess what's going to be under the same corporate banner? HBO and Showtime. I mean, I know, like, boxing fans 20 or 30 years ago would have been like, whoa, you know, but, like, it's been a long time since we spoke of them in the same breath. Like, it was an actual rivalry between the networks. I think the end of the boxing rivalry was the end of anybody really kind of mentioning them in the same breath. Now it's more of an interesting footnote. Like, hey, Showtime used to be a real competitor to HBO, and now they're going to be under the same banner. So there's just going to be a lot of different aspects to this that are going to be fascinating to watch. And again, it has been a great joy of mine to be able to track all of this on the show with you, Ben. I know our mini series covering this goes back to 2020. So you and I, we started doing this during the pandemic. You and I are 6 years into charting all of these developments, and I know there's a lot still in front of us to be able to do. A pleasure to have you on, as always, my friend. Thank you so much for making time.
I appreciate it, Rick.
Thanks, Ben, and thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1922.